Transportation update. October 12th at 9:31. I want to welcome everybody. Andy, would you mind doing the inspiration?
No, I'd love to. This is a Tibetan folk story that makes me smile. On the morning of his 50th birthday, a prosperous merchant sprang out of bed with a grin. Singing and whistling, he saddled his favorite ox and dressed in his finest robes. "Where are you going so early?" inquired his wife. "Today I'm 50 and grateful," he laughed. "Today I shall ride back down the road and thank all the ones who made such a difference in my life." Hearing this, the merchant's wife threw herself on the rug and burst into tears. "Why so sad?" he asked. "Road back is long," she cried. "You will never return." "It's true. The road back is long and gets longer every year. But most of us would surely take it if we could. Along the way, we would meet anew all the good people who made such a difference in our lives. Did someone walk you home from school when you were little? Who sat up with you at night when you were sick? Who taught you how to catch a fish, or kick the ball, or carry a tune? Who talked you out of quitting the team, or who talked you into getting a degree? Who gave you your first break, or your first order, or bet on your company, or told you how good you really could be? Who cheered you on when you were winning, or cheered you up when you were down? Who thought of you when everyone else was thinking of themselves? So for me, the road back is long, and some of these people are gone now. Did I thank them? I don't know. I don't think so, but I meant to.
Wow, very nice.
Thank you.
Fresh smile.
Yeah, like,
yes.
Depressed by that.
That was depressing?
Well, yeah, because it reminds you, don't wait. And I've done that. I was like, I got to call so-and-so next thing. Oh, so-and-so got it. What?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Couple times, Vanessa, never again. You got it. When you think about it, do it.
Exactly. Yep, especially making sure you tell people how important they are in your life.
Right.
So very inspirational.
Oh,
good.
Okay, you could all please join me and stand if you're able. Our flag. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You know, Gene is in the room. That's my prayer right there.
Okay, so Linda normally does roll call, but I so Pauline will do roll call. This is safe with you.
Linda Barcelona. Elizabeth Busa here. Barry Chan,
present.
Dean Hernandez.
Here.
You know, Kim is not here. Beth Levin is not here. Crystal Miles.
Present.
Lily Nguyen, we knew she's not going to be here. All this. Irene Rose, here. Sandy Stang,
here.
Nathan Steele.
Here.
Have a call.
Thank you. Okay, agenda item 5, public comment. This time, members of the public may address the council on any items within the subject jurisdiction. Provided that no action is taken on off agenda items unless authorized by law, comments shall be limited to 3 minutes unless chair pre-identifies different times to start a meeting for all the speakers, which I am not. Do we have any public comment? Have any public comment? Nope.
No.
All right, moving on to item number six, our presentation. I'd like to introduce Nate Robbins from the City of Costa Mesa, and he is going to talk about Mobile Home Rental Assistance Program, and I think he's going to go into some other things specific to our group. I want to say welcome and thank you. We had a crazy time trying to get him here, and I'm so pleased that it finally worked out. I want to say thank you for putting us in your schedule today. So thank you and welcome.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be here. I appreciate the opportunity. My name is Nate Robbins. As it was mentioned, my official title is the Neighborhood Improvement Manager for the City of Costa Mesa. Ultimately, what that is I'm responsible for the city's response to homelessness, and then I'm the lead on all the development of affordable housing in the city as well. Just a little bit about me. I started my career in the public sector at City of Garden Grove. where I was there for 14 years total. The first 8 as a police officer. I suffered a catastrophic injury to my lower back. I had my spine fused. Changed my life completely and sent me in a whole new direction. I thought I'd retire as a cop. I wasn't the guy that always wanted to be a cop either. I just wanted to help people. And what I found was being a cop, it's really hard to help people when you're a cop. There's certain objectives that you're given that don't have much to do with helping people. So the injury actually forced me into a career in community development at the City of Garden Grove prior to 2018. You remember that's kind of when homelessness, there was a light shine on homelessness. And around 2018, when Judge Carter came on the scene, ECCOC and their projection for permanent supportive housing in the county. That's the Catholic worker lawsuit against Santa Ana, Costa Mesa. I wasn't there yet, but kind of forcing cities to build shelter, right? To be able to shelter the folks in their cities and around the county that were experiencing homelessness. So I tried my best to get the system at Garden Grove up and running. Just, it was too slow for me. I wanted there to be more progress. So I decided to take a promotion at a city that was already doing a lot for homelessness. So when I got to Costa Mesa, I realized that for over a decade, since even before 2010, Costa Mesa was, had a really strong focus on addressing homelessness through the Network for Homeless Solutions, which is, it's a city entity, but it's technically what I manage, but it's not a separate entity. It's included within the city. And so upon getting there, my job was to just assess the system, see where there were gaps, how we could come up with solutions to better serve the population. And so I think what's interesting about me being here is that Costa Mesa, I ran the numbers, of our 225 roughly homeless people in the city, 32% are senior citizens. We have a couple of 80-year-olds in our shelter, actually quite a few 70-year-olds. I mean, it's heartbreaking to see people with on a fixed income, no support, who are on the street without housing, without a car, without the ability to get a job because of their age or their disabilities or whatever. And so, again, me being here, it's kind of by coincidence that I think Costa Mesa might have one of the largest senior citizen, these homeless populations in the county. So it's kind of serendipitous. But so I want to just give you guys an overview of what Costa Mesa does. Is it the arrow?
Is that an on-off switch?
But I got to do that first, right?
Can you do it for him?
Can you just advance the slide?
You know, whenever I talk about what Costa Mesa does, we can break it into 3 categories or buckets or focus areas, whatever you want to call them. Outreach and engagement, emergency shelter, and supportive housing. I believe that every city across the country can take on the same model, at least in some small way. You don't have to do necessarily as much as Costa Mesa does, but again, every city should have a system like this in place. City Costa Mesa is pretty rare, even across the entire country, because we actually employ our own team of outreach workers to go out and meet people experiencing homelessness where they are, behind businesses, dumpster enclosures. I mean, what happens out there. We actually employ 8 people. So we have a supervisor and then 2 full-time, a few part-time, and then an office analyst or aide to help us on that side. We actually even have a code enforcement officer that helps businesses with private or private property to deal with homelessness to help mitigate all of that. Costa Mesa has a 85-bed homeless shelter, just added an additional 16 beds. Just to give you some stats on that, 20 of our of 85 people are over 65 in the shelter. So it's a pretty dire situation, because people that are advanced in age have, in most cases, have zero ability to increase their income, to access, you know, resources and services on their own. So it's really incumbent upon the city to step in and act as that safety net.
outreach in general, and I'll get to the housing in a second. Just some stats from last year. My team went out and contacted 386 individuals. That's unduplicated. If you contact the same person twice, that doesn't count in that number. These are 386 unduplicated individuals throughout a year that found themselves in Costa Mesa. Some of them are longtime Costa Mesa residents. Some of them lived in Costa Mesa for 4 years. As an example, we got a call that there was an elderly gentleman who had taken residence at a bus stop. And we found out because a neighbor recognized him. This gentleman was their old neighbor. He had lived next to them for 35 years. His wife died. They incurred a ton of medical debt. He lost the house. He lost their car. He had nowhere to go. He had no support. So went to the bus stop that was 100 feet from his house. That's where he started to live. And when you look at, when you think about homelessness, you think mentally ill, drug addicts. That's just not the case. Right. There are some people that have mental illness that use substances to self-medicate. And it's tough on the streets, just to kind of numb that feeling of hopelessness. Right. But there's always an event that causes the homelessness. And it usually comes with lack of income, lack of support. Even my story, when I got hurt, I don't know if you know the workers' comp system, but it's completely broken. No fault of my own. Hurt at work. I only got paid for 12 months. My recovery alone was 12 months, not to mention the workers' comp to get to the surgery. So I was off payroll. I was off. I had no medical insurance, a wife and 3 kids. We lost our house. We lost all of our cars. If I didn't have my family to move into, I would have been homeless too. With my family, college educated, making 6 figures like that, almost homeless. So being in this field now, coming from where I came from, I have a ton of empathy for, you know, for people that are experiencing that, just feeling stuck in that place where they feel like there's no way out.
Hey, can I ask you a question?
Of course,
sorry.
Of course.
So in that homeless shelter in Costa Mesa, are you guys part of the North Spa?
Central.
Or Central. Okay.
Yeah, so Central Spa.
Because I'm also vice chair for Bridges and Kramer Place Advisory, and that's all North Spa. When you talk about 32% of the 225 are older adults, and the numbers that you have here, is that just your shelter in Costa Mesa, or is that also any of them that might have actually gone to any of the Central Spa?
Yeah, so that's just Costa Mesa. I got all these numbers last night at like 10 p.m. So that's as current.
Okay.
Right now in the Costa Mesa shelter, okay, there's 75 people in there. 20 of them are over 65.
Okay.
30 of them are between 50 and 64, so right on the edge, and only 15 are under 50. I mean, you think about homelessness, again, affecting the younger population, they're out causing trouble, which is not the case, at least in Costa Mesa.
Right.
And I would actually assume that it's probably way across the board just because of the circumstances.
Or is it the younger population that refuses to go into the shelters?
Yeah, so we say that they're not done. And a lot of times the younger kids, because they have more energy and you know, they can battle through some of these adverse, you know, situations, they tend to not want to go into the shelter. But you know, that we have 70-year-olds in the same way, stubborn, I want to do it on my own, you know. So but you're right. I think usually the younger population tends to deny services a little bit more because they think they have it all figured out. But it's like my kids. We try to do a really good job of reuniting people. So services are one thing, but putting someone where they have support is the most important part about ending someone's homelessness. You can ship them off to Anaheim where they don't know anybody, and they'll just recidivize right back in because they don't know anybody and they're not connected to the community. So reuniting with family is actually one of the best choices for someone, shipping them back to, we do it all the time, Tennessee, Alabama, because they came out here to, it's California, it's the dream, right? And then they come and it's not everything they expected. They end up homeless. Costa Mesa was known for a really long time in the Rehab Riviera. We have, and I still think we have the highest per capita rehab homes in the country. Costa Mesa was one of the first cities to file a lawsuit against, the rehab industry, if you will, to put stricter regulations on how close in proximity they could be, how many people they could allow in there. State law doesn't help, right? State law says if you're under six people, you don't even need to register and no one monitors your facility. Well, I could say I have six people and there's 20 people in the garage, which, by the way, I've been on many calls like that in our program. It's unfortunate.
Well, and that, and just because, again, you know, my experience with different committees I'm on and stuff, that's a huge problem because, especially these private ones, as soon as you stop paying, they just kick you out of the street. They don't try and attempt to reunite you or get you into another program or find assistance that can help pay for the program. They've got their $20,000 a month and then they go, oh, sorry. And then they literally just kick them out of the street and they're adding to the homeless population.
Yeah,
so
it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
And then so what you have are these rehab places that are authorized facilities with different state programs. So someone from Alabama, it's not like it's their choice to necessarily come to Costa Mesa. They might get sent to Costa Mesa by a program that's paying for it. But then there's no monitoring. There's no following through or case management. If someone falls out of the program, now they're homeless in Costa Mesa.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's a difficult situation because we want to help them because we care. But a lot of the funding that we have to be... have to have ties to Costa Mesa to access the funding and the resources. And it's like that with every city. So the county steps in. PATH, as you know, is the central spot outreach. I think, as you know, for the county, so PATH does a really good job helping the non-Costa Mesa residents that are in Costa Mesa to access services. But
quick question. You really focus on Costa Mesa, but homelessness is very transitory and a regional problem.
Yeah.
So it sounds like, wouldn't you be better off if this was taking more advantage of the spot, make it more regional resources as opposed to just Costa Mesa?
Right.
Like you said, every city should have what Costa Mesa is doing. I disagree. I don't think we should be doing it. I think it should have regional areas that have greater impact because no one city can bear the cost of this. Now, we're fortunate. I'm Yorba Linda. In our city, we have one homeless person. We know who that is, and they're homeless by choice. We give resources with them, hey, you can't do certain things. But the reality is, this is a problem that we recognize for our neighbors, and so we're willing to support financially that. And I think we need to start waking up to this is a regional issue. We've tried for years to do it one-on-one. Our own city doesn't work.
Right. Just I agree. And, you know, I work for the city of Costa Mesa, so I don't have much impact on that. My goal is to create a system that's then replicable across the county. Because I agree, but it's on a sliding scale. So if you have one homeless person, you don't need your own outreach team and a shelter and permanent supportive housing, right? However, all ships rise in the tide. So like you said, it is a regional issue. And so cities need to take responsibility for the regional issue. But it needs to be led by the state, right? And it's only been 5-6 years since I've been a topic of discussion. Things are getting better, but really, if cities are waiting for the county to step in and be that clearinghouse, they're getting to hold your breath.
I think that's long gone. I think we've moved well beyond that. The problem was, why it was an issue? We've always had homeless. I worked for Orange PD at one time, and we had a huge problem there, and that riverbed had been there forever until there was the will from the whole county say, no, this is unacceptable. Of course, the laws came in and tweaked certain things. It's not just that we could say, okay, we're going to enforce law. We had to say, you have to have an alternative where they can go.
Right.
So the spas, which I think was a good thing.
Yeah.
So now, if you don't want to get treatment, if you don't want long-term and intermediate and initial help, really, that's on you. I mean, you'd mentioned how some of these people, through no fault of their own, using you as an example, I would suggest there's a whole lot more people that just had a lifestyle of poor choices and ended up where they are. When you say, well, family, get with family, that is the best solution. However, families reject these people because they're not very nice people. Right. You know, when you get to the point where you're home, you're not pleasant to be around, and the family say, I'm done with you, out of here. So it's a huge problem. It's tough. Yeah. And I think a lot of the hardest problem is the mental illness side. Those that need work and don't make enough, need more job skills, that you can work with. You're mentally ill. There's only one way to deal with that. You've got to get treatment.
Right.
Got to get treatment. And we took away that ability when we changed the, you know, mental illness is not a crime. Okay. So now, if you want to stand on the street corner and bay at the moon, you can.
Right.
And people get now are waking up to that. That's not good for business. Doesn't help our community. It looks bad. You know.
Right.
So, well, I don't care what the motivation is. Get them help.
Yeah. Well, you know, the pendulum swung from being very community based. It swung the wrong way, in my opinion, where individuals' rights are more important than the larger community, which is not, how it works. And so I think we're kind of getting back into that smart versus poison is the case law you're talking about.
Yeah.
Where you can't arrest somebody for denying services if there's nowhere for them to go. And so that's why cities, at least regionally, or independent cities, need to have shelter beds to be able to address camping in their city.
Are you all aware of that Idaho case? That was the case where cities try to enforce homeless from sleeping in their parks or on the steps of City Hall. Well, the courts came out and said, you can't do that unless you can give them an alternate place to go.
Yeah.
If you can't, then they're going to sleep in your park and they can camp and they can cook and do everything they want to do there.
Yeah.
So people, finally, the city's government said, hey, we got to get together. We got to create a place for these folks to go. If they don't have an alternative, you can't enforce the law.
Yeah.
So SPOT, if you've heard the word SPOT, service provider area. So it's broken into South, Central, and North. And so there's 13, 14 cities per SPOT or service provider area for those of you that may not know what SPOT means. And that's, so the county came up with Bridges at Kramer Place. It's one of the first county run shelters run by Mercy House, at least for the North SPOT. And so there's a whole all the cities in the North SPOT financially contribute into the upkeep and maintenance of this. So then that way, like for Villa Park, we don't have a shelter in our city. But because of the laws and the ordinance now, if there's a homeless person, they're given the option to either, be relocated to a homeless shelter in the North SPOT, which is Bridges at Kramer Place, or they have to leave. And if they choose neither, then they can be arrested for the camping ordinance. So that's how that all came full circle. So every time we say SPOT, it's service provider area.
Yeah, but enforcement's needed. So the mentality that we take in Costa Mesa is making someone's life difficult in love, right? So even just contacting somebody that's experiencing homelessness every day until they're ready to accept help is actually very, very effective. Coming in and arresting them with the way that the court system is now is ineffective because they're not even filing these cases. So it's a waste of the police officer's time. Even if they do file it, they're not going to go to court. So the judge issues a bench warrant. They're not going to go to court anyway. So someone has 47 warrants for their arrest. They're homeless. What do they care? They don't have money. What are they going to, right? And so that's the least effective way. It's a tool on, along the continuum, if you will, because people need to know that their behavior does matter. But at the end of the day, it's the one-on-one relationships between that person and outreach to get them to a place where they're willing to accept the help and walk this journey to end their homelessness. Sometimes it takes 20 years. You just had a veteran that was homeless for 20 years, just like last week at off the street. I got a report from one of my outreach workers last night. He's a veteran, so he has a huge heart for the vets that are out there alone.
20 years on the street.
20 years. Yeah. And a vet for our country.
Yeah.
So we also have we house 27 people from the street, which is very difficult. Get them in a shelter. You know where they're at. They're more engaged. You can assist them every single day. When you're trying to work with someone on the street, you might only see them once. Because like Gene said, it's very transitory. So it is a regional issue. We work with the city of Newport Beach hand in hand. Everything we do is in line with them. So their outreach, our outreach, and I'll get to the shelter in a sec. But we have a hotline. We've received 1,800 calls in a year. 80% of them are from people seeking assistance for themselves. I'm experiencing homelessness. I'm at risk of homelessness. Please help me. And then you see the rest here. Next slide, please. So the shelter, again, it was 69 beds. We just added 16, so we're at 85. And we just received a $3.8 million grant to add an additional 15 beds, Behavioral Health Bridge Housing Program. So also, like Gene mentioned, mental health and substance use are the two biggest barriers to people ending their homes. With the demise of the mental health system, at least in the state of California and across the country, for a really long time, I think since the 80s when that happened, right? And so now
Even if you have private insurance, good luck. There's no mental health care out there. I have Kaiser. It's one of the highest premium plans for the city. It's like an 8-month wait to get a mental health appointment. There just is no mental health care out there. So the state stepping in, I don't know if you've heard about the CARE Court program, the CARE Court Act. Most of that is going to be voluntary. So someone that knows that they're either severely mentally ill or have substance use disorder and enter into a voluntary plan to be able to get housed temporarily, you know, all the things that they would need to do to assist them to get to a place where they can reintegrate into the community, get a job, those types of things. City of Costa Mesa is one of the first cities in the state of California to kind of be at the forefront of that by adding these behavioral health beds at the shelter. The county's then going to come in and provide the mental health care. They'll send clinicians to the shelter. There'll be medications, all that kind of stuff. So it's super important, right? I mean, again, no single city can solve it, but it's up to the cities to move the needle. And if every city just moves the needle one tick, then as a region, we are going to be that much more successful.
And can I ask you, do you make an outreach to involve your faith-based community and your business community? This is a problem for everyone. You know, everyone wants to put it on the city, or like they used to want to put it on the police, which police weren't geared for this kind of thing. They are now, but that was never the case. And it should have been really a community problem coming together. And I'd like to know if you kind of reach out to that too, rather than say, sounds like everything's driven by the city in this case, which, okay, but you're relieving other people's responsibility, particularly the families of these people. How come they get off the hook on this? You know, it's like, you're a pain, you're out of here. Wait a minute. So you're going to put that burden on somebody else who's going to have to pay for it, not you?
Yeah.
There's got to be some accountability.
Sure. So the city's the backbone, like you said, of everything, or the conductor, if you will. Because if a community is doing something opposite or outside of what the city's doing, there's just no synergy there. So right. City of Costa Mesa has a great, great community. We also have Trellis International. You guys heard of Trellis? It's a local faith-based nonprofit that does community engagement. That's the number one. They do Love Costa Mesa, love, you know, blank, fill in the blank. And so they are our connection to the community, faith-based businesses, residents, whatever.
They do you.
So the city, I like to explain it as the city can only do so much. And so as we approach that cliff, as much as I want to continue to do what we're doing, we just can't just because of the limitations. So then we engage the community to help come alongside and bridge that gap between where we can't go and what needs to be done. And so, yes, faith-based. I'll actually get to it a little bit at the end, the way that the community can get involved, it does get involved to help with what we do.
And can I ask you a question real quick? Are you guys involved with Be Well OC at all?
So really quick, Be Well is great. I was at Garden Grove when Be Well came from Eugene, Oregon, and was going to get implemented to Orange County. Huntington Beach, Garden Grove were the first two cities to get it. So I was part of that initial implementation. I'm very familiar with it. Costa Mesa probably won't do Be Well just because of, I don't want to say conflicts, but it doesn't necessarily fit into what we're doing or looking to do. I'm actually going to develop my own crisis team. I personally believe that homelessness and then private insurance people that are housed, that they have to bifurcate it just because of the funds and sources that can help each. So we're looking at getting Street Medicine, a program from Cal Optima, to address people experiencing homelessness. Then I want to create a crisis team that will go out to people's homes, people that are housed with private insurance because they don't have access to mental health or, legal services, all these other things, where if someone's in crisis, it could be an elderly person being evicted, it could be a family with a child that has suicidal ideology, but just going to where they are to provide that intervention and then refer them out to legal services. So EWOL's great. Mm-hmm. It's just expensive. It's like $1.3 million a year. I already have a $1.3 million outreach budget. I can't double it. For that service,
What's interesting is that I've heard these many times dealt with homeless and solutions. It's like we're the tail end of the water pipe where the water's blasting out. We have our mouth open. We're trying to suck it all in and try to end the problem. I think we need to put equal amount of attention on the beginning of the pipeline. How do people end up here? How do they end up with no money at the end of their life? They have no resources, family, they got drug addict, whatever. You know, it seems if we could catch it here, that would be more effective and efficient. Same with the police. I used to tell people, hey, the police are very effective. We picture an anthill. We're great at picking the ants off the hill. But wouldn't it be better if we eliminated the anthill? So that's what needs to happen at some point. And I don't know if people even think in that fashion or in that direction, but this is, again, putting the Band-Aid on the problem. We're doing the best we can to, now you're in the pipeline, so we can help you out.
Right.
Avoid getting them in the pipe.
Right. So we call those upstream services.
Yes.
Homelessness prevention is a huge focus in City of Costa Mesa. These are outreach. I could have expanded on a little bit, but we do some outreach in that way, and I'll explain it here in a sec. But you're right. The shelter is for people experiencing homelessness. There's no prevention aspect. But those upstream services have to deal with families with children and the elderly, because those are the stream that flow into homelessness, right? So everything we do is with that in mind. We give money to an organization called Project Hope Alliance, who is in every single one of Costa Mesa, or Newport Mesa, I should say, high schools and elementary schools. They have counselors on site to provide services to families that are at risk of homelessness or experiencing homelessness. There's 600 tier one families in Newport Mesa, 600 people or families experiencing homelessness, living in a car, living out of motels, living in a neighbor's garage, right? Not meant for permanent habitation. 600 families, 3 people per family. That's, you know, 1,800 people that are suffering every day. Kids don't know where their meals are going to come from. They don't have even the mental capacity to do their homework because mom and dad are worrying about what they're going to feed them, you know, for dinner. So it's very sad, but you're right. That needs to be a lot bigger of a focus regionally, which it's not. It's about focusing on the problem at hand.
Why do you get those numbers in Costa Mesa when other cities don't? Why do they gravitate towards there or Santa Ana or Anaheim? Is it because of the services that are provided, you think, maybe? Or, although you said they were your residents, I mean,
yeah.
Wow, that's...
It's like that everywhere. So the McKinney-Bento, the problem with that number is it's even underreported. So every year when you register your kids for school, there's a checkbox that says, are you experiencing homelessness? Are you... Well, if I'm scared, say maybe I'm not a legal citizen, or I'm afraid someone's going to take my kids, I'm not answering that accurately. That's only the people that choose to answer that question accurately. There's probably double that. And that's in every city across Orange County and probably the state and the country.
You think those numbers do skew it, that there we have an issue where it's not accurately reported? So that's what's created these huge numbers.
Yeah, I think so.
So when they check that box, then what happens? If I check the box and said, yes, I have some issues, then what would happen?
So that's more for data. It's data collection. It doesn't necessarily then authorize them for any types of services. They still have to access the resources via the social workers that are on site at the campuses. That's a data, that's a figure that the school district can use and get funding from different agencies to then support that population.
Okay.
And then of course, you know, data drives policy too. So as the numbers rise, the people that set the policy hopefully wake up and go, wow, this is an issue. We need to address this. So it's unfortunate that it's underreported because the problem isn't displayed as big as it actually is. It's that people don't think it's as big of a deal as it is. And it's massive. It's huge. Next slide.
People support of out of sight, out of mind is what people want.
Right.
I don't see it. We don't have a problem.
It's true. And with families, because they don't want to be known as homeless because of all the issues that I just mentioned, they go to motels and they're not asking for help because they don't want to get in trouble for not being able to provide for their children. It's very unfortunate. So City of Costa Mesa is very lucky to have this is an approved home key project. Motel 6 received $14.8 million from the state of California to acquire the Motel 6 off of Newport Boulevard. City of Costa Mesa put in $5.85 million of our own city money. It's going to be 78 units of permanent supportive housing, 30 VASH vouchers, so 30 veteran units, 10 MHSA units, so, you know, mental health, people experiencing mental health issues. And then phase two, 47 very low income senior units, and those are Costa Mesa seniors. There's the other problem with housing, is that housing is produced in cities by cities, usually. And when a city contributes money, the people that live in that housing unit have to be from that city. So Costa Mesa can do an awesome job, Santa Ana can do an awesome job, Anaheim. But if a city doesn't want to produce affordable housing,
there's going to be a lack of it for their residents. There's just no way around it. There's no regional housing being built necessarily.
When you say the 10 individuals that will go in there will may have some mental health issues, what supportive services are around them? Are they just, here's the house, here's your place, good luck, goodbye?
That's a great question. So the definition of PSH or permanent supportive housing is that it's permanent housing for people that were experiencing homelessness with on-site wraparound service.
Okay.
So the problem with a lot of services is that, okay, there's this reason. So you're in Costa Mesa, but your doctor's in Santa Ana, or your outreach worker's in Anaheim. They're not going to go to Anaheim, Santa Ana. They're just not going to go to their appointments. So by far, the most effective way to treat people is to bring those services to them.
Yeah.
So this project will have an office for the VA, Orange County Healthcare Agency, Mercy House is the main provider. They'll have offices on site. So everything that anybody needs is right there in-house.
Perfect.
That's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
The city, through the county of Orange, has applied for a second Home Key grant. Costa Mesa is a small city, so the fact that we could have two Home Key projects is massive. I'm super proud of the city and the work that we do that would even make that available. That's going to be 76 units, the first ever joint housing development between the city of Costa Mesa and city of Newport Beach. And American Family Housing is going to be the developer service provider on that. We don't yet have the award, but it's going to be here, I hope, within the next couple of weeks. So it's super exciting as well. Next slide. And then Families Forward, we provided just under $1 million in ARPA money. So the city got massive $13 million or something like that in American Rescue Plan Act money through COVID. We used some of that money to build housing for families. So it's only 8 units, but there are 2 and 3 bedroom, but so 36 individuals for families can live in each unit. So a lot going on as far as housing in the city of Costa Mesa. Homelessness prevention, the city's allocated over $2 million since COVID. So in the last 3 years, over $2 million to prevent homelessness. That's families, that's seniors, you name it. Anybody that's in a house that's at risk of homelessness can access those programs. I actually brought some flyers. I know this isn't, but probably none of you are from Costa Mesa, but just know that the city does have rental assistance programs to prevent homelessness. And we're actually in the middle of developing an eviction ordinance that would further protect tenants from being wrongfully evicted. I don't know if you've heard kind of the buzz now, but with the Tenant Protection Act in 2019, the state that the governor signed into law allows landlords to do just cause, no fault eviction. So you could be living in a place, paying your rent on time, following all the rules, and the landlord still evicts you in the middle of your lease, and you have nothing to say about it. State law, there were a ton of loopholes where owners were saying, I'm going to evict you because I want to substantially rehabilitate your unit, kick them out, paint a wall, and then jack the rent up to $5,000 a month, right? So people were being evicted. We had mass evictions. Imagine a property owner wants everyone out. Well, look, I'm going to rehab the entire building. So 16 families get out. 16 families wants all homeless because this owner wants to do some rehab. There's no checks and balances, no accountability for current state law. So City of Costa Mesa is stepping in and we're enacting an ordinance likely next Tuesday that'll make that impossible. They'll hold property owners accountable. It happens to seniors and families very, very often in the City of Costa Mesa. Almost every council meeting, we have people coming crying during public comment because they're being evicted and they didn't do anything wrong and they have nowhere to go. So,
you know, it's unfortunate. We're hearing the flip side of the story too, where people are gaming the system where they go in, squat, you can't get them out.
Yeah.
No law can get them out. I mean, that's ridiculous. Years actually they'll be in there.
There's one that's $6,000.
Yeah. And she actually, that one has actually done that a couple of times. They're tracking her down where she's done it in Northern California and Southern California. So it's really hard. You're fighting a PR battle.
Yeah. I've been a landlord. I sold all my property in California, and because it is so hard to get people out, I haven't been able to get them out, and they do all this damage to the building.
Yeah.
They weren't even tenants to begin with.
And you know, there's always two sides. What we find is the former is a lot more common in that owners are evicting people, not necessarily wrongfully, but without any regard for the families. The squatting, it happens for sure, but it's much, much less of an issue.
I'm surprised that the cities would jump on that. If somebody came to us and said, hey, you know, we're getting evicted for no reason or no good reason, we'd go to that owner and say, hey, what's up here? What are you doing? I mean, you can step in.
Yeah, usually there is.
Yeah, two sides.
And a lot of the rules changed during COVID, and now they're just starting.
Moratorium.
Yes, yes. And then, you know, they did cap the rent increases.
10% a year, yeah.
Well, it's 5% plus the CPI of the area that you're in, which is really confusing for a lot of people. Nobody expected the CPI to go so high, so people were getting 8 and 10% increases because of our high CPI. But there's usually a reason.
There's the landlords have the right legally to evict people without cause. It's intent to occupy,
but not during the middle of a lease.
Yeah,
it's a lease is a legal agreement. You can't do it in the middle of a lease.
Yeah, so that's what the law allows for only four reasons: intent to occupy by the owner, or an immediate family member, so grandma, grandpa, whatever, intent to demolish or rehabilitate, intent to take the property off the rental market, or complying with the governmental order. So in the middle of the lease, for no reason other than one of those four, you can be evicted from your place. And without any accountability, so I'm gonna do rehab, but I don't need to prove to pull any permits, I'm not being required. Well, I can just say I'm doing that, kick everyone out, jack the rents up, and now everyone's homeless, and I mean, you know, it's all because of my...
And you're seeing that in Costa Mesa?
Oh, yeah.
Because we don't see that at all. That would never...
Dozens of families are facing that. And that's just Costa Mesa. It's happening regionally for sure, which is why cities are just now stepping up and closing the loopholes that the state left open in the Tenant Protection Act. But again, there's two sides, you know, which is why what we're doing is not at all to discriminate against property owners either. We had to be careful with that. We can't just side completely on the tenants because these business owners are our constituents as well.
COVID did do exactly that. They sided on the side of the occupants, not the owners, and they became the bad guys. You know, you already make enough money, you don't need more. They're going, no, we don't.
Yeah.
You just took away our livelihood.
Yeah, it's just me and my...
Yeah.
We had, you know, we call them mom and pop, just a wife and a husband bought a property for retirement's sake, and now they have these people who aren't paying their rent. They can't evict them.
And they still have to pay the mortgage.
They still have to pay the mortgage. And they have to upkeep the property and all of that.
Just the mortgage, the taxes keep
taxes
going up.
Else.
All kinds of other fees that keep going up. The utilities that the landlord pays keeps going up.
Yeah. So it's all state law. You know, state law affects all of that. But, okay, so next one. And then, so this is where I was talking about, Gene, to your point, is we do engage the community to help in many different ways. In each one of those buckets, like I talked about, we... ask for people to be part of street outreach teams. So the city does our thing from a more professional capacity, but we also have churches that'll form groups to go out and just talk to people. Hey, we love you. We're here for you. You're important. You matter. Oh, if you want help, here's the number of the Costa Mesa outreach team. Right? Just try to build those relationships, show people that their lives do matter and there is hope if they just engage. Shelter support teams, Grace Fellowship is right next door to the Bridge Shelter in Costa Mesa. They'll come in and do bingo nights, trivia nights, karaoke, and cornhole tournaments, and they'll barbecue. It's amazing. It really is. Every time they leave, the guests, you can just see it on their faces. They're so happy. They're so glad that someone came in for no good reason other than they just wanted to love on these people. And it truly is life-changing for them.
Is there a time frame for people to be in those shelters?
So technically, it's a 180-day shelter, but we've had people there for 2.5 years. So as long as if someone's, the amount of barriers that someone has will never get them kicked out of a shelter, as long as they're working to eliminate those barriers. So you could have 100 barriers, and it's going to take you 2 years, but if you're working toward that, it's fine. It's the people that come in and go, all right, feed me. You know, and it's like, wait a minute, that's not what this is. You know, if you're not working, then we're going to exit. Because someone else out there on the street is ready to work, right? And so we have people that they exit themselves, we have to exit them, but 180 days is usually the average. And then housing retention, maybe the most important. So The systemic issue now is someone gets housed and everyone has a big party and then they walk away. Now this person's alone and they're isolated and they're not integrated in the community at all. And a lot of times they'll recidivize right back into homelessness, or they'll invite their friends over who are potentially drug users, and then they'll just fall back in. So having teams of people that can go out and form these bonds, help people to, again, integrate back into the community. Where's the grocery store? Where's the post office? What's the nearest bus route? These things that we all take for granted. If you live in Costa Mesa for 30 years and you find a house in Anaheim, you're not going to know what's in Anaheim is available. So we lean heavily on the faith community and just philanthropy in general to be able to support people within the house. We have a partnership with IKEA where they'll help us furnish a wallet from, you know, ceiling to floor, fully furnished one-bedroom apartments for $3,000. It's very, it has a sense of dignity. You know, if you, a lot of times we bring a homeless person to a garage full of donated furniture and, hey, look, something's better than nothing, right? But there's no real dignity in that when you're selecting couches that are falling apart and now you're furnishing your place. This is all brand new furniture, again, window coverings, everything from IKEA. So they're a great
partner. $3,000.
$3,000. Yeah, really, really great. So, and then I don't think that's it. Next slide. Yeah. So my contact, if you know your cities want to implement stuff like this, or you want to pick my brain, I'm always, always going to talk to you, email or whatever. So here's my contact info. I do have some flyers for them for one of the rental assistance programs that we have close to Mesa. Again, I don't expect anyone here would need to access that, but it is available. Yeah. Any more questions? Anything else?
Right.
I probably ran a little long, but
no, you're good.
Am I good?
Okay.
Yeah,
that's a question.
Oh, no, you can go first.
Sorry,
Nathan. I learn so much when I come to these meetings. I really do. I'm new to all this stuff. As I keep saying, I'm a rookie, even though I've been in now 7 months, I've been in public office. So, you know, and all these things are, and I'm from Seal Beach. We're kind of like this odd little hangnail off the coast of California, isolated by 405. We do have homeless that show up there. I'm very proud of our police department. We have a community outreach policing unit. We have 10 guys and their own vehicles, so we don't have a regular policeman going to the homeless people. They're trained to deal with these guys, and we partner with other communities and other shelters too for people who want help. And I'm not exactly even sure what that is, but I really appreciate this presentation. I especially am sensitive to the seniors. I live in Leisure World, and some of the stories I've heard over the last few months of seniors literally be out of pride or what have you, become homeless before they actually ask for help. And so I appreciate that. And this is a lesson for me. I really appreciate it, Nate. You should use the long form of your name, though, instead of just the...
Thank you. Yeah, of course. Yeah, Costa Mesa has a community policing unit as well, where it's six officers that do the same thing. So alleviate that burden from the rest of the force, they can do assault crime, things like that. And they work hand in hand with my outreach team to provide the stick and the carrot.
Yeah.
Look, we love you. There's resources, but if you're not going to listen, we're going to call our buddies in blue. Yeah.
Can you put that last slide up again? I was capturing his email address.
So your story about the previous landlords evicting everybody for unjust causes, I am sure that if that really is happening in such a number, that lawsuits would be against that. I mean, accountability on both sides seems to be lacking in, but I just can't believe that landlord would not be sued back.
Right. So
the story, you know, it's just hard for me.
Well, the loophole in state law allows landlords to do that by right. So say I'm going to rehabilitate this property.
But I'm sure that people could bring a lawsuit against that if you're saying, that's all I'm saying. I mean, the lawsuits are numerous that the city found out that landlord was doing that. I'm sure that lawsuits could be brought against them. So I'm just saying, you know, I mean, I have being friends and tenants that have gone 2 years during the COVID, no rent paid, and, you know, they're losing everything.
Right. Yeah, so that was because of the moratorium. Beginning April 2024, the state will allow lawsuits to be brought against landlords that don't follow through with the rehab. But the way that the law was written, there was no enforceability, no accountability from whenever, and from 2019 until it's going to be April 2024 with a new law enacted. But yeah, there's, I could say I'm doing rehab, get out, and then not do the rehab.
And there's no recourse because the law wasn't written correctly, unfortunately. But that's the problem, right? The state enacts laws that have loopholes, and then the cities have to deal with it.
Yes. Okay, any other questions? Elizabeth.
It's been so important to me. My 55-year-old niece, who has been renting a house for years, same house, right there, border of Costa Mesa and Fort Beach.
Okay.
I've never been invited here, so that's all I know. She's coming to live with me because she's been convicted because the house was being sold. Mm-hmm. And this happened in November. So as of November, I get her. And she has searched everywhere for a place. And being 55, she obviously eligible for like senior housing. But there is nothing for under $3,000. And she has a job, so she doesn't qualify for low income. She is well educated, very bright. She's never been on drugs, but she does vape. But
yeah.
Anyway, when she lives with me, that will be outside because
sure.
I'm not going to get my house.
So, ironically, I was just evicted for that same reason. So I
kind of how my life's gone, right? I almost experienced homelessness. Now I'm in the homelessness. I almost was evicted. I was evicted. Now I'm working on the sufficient ordinance, but for the same reason. We lived in the same house for 7 years. Again, I'm college educated, make really good money. My rent was reasonable, but when I was kicked out,
the lowest rent is $4,000 for a house that can fit my family.
So my rent overnight went up $1,350 overnight. That's enough for a one bedroom that my rent's increasing by.
Yeah, unless you want to live out.
I can't do that.
Can't do it. So I had to borrow money from my parents to be able to pay the $12,000 2 months of borrowing. And my rent is $12,000.
I can't afford that. So you're right. It's almost impossible if you don't have some kind of support system. This will help her.
That's right.
If she is, so the income's down here. If she fits into these income categories, she can get a deposit and up to 6 months of rent through that program.
Wow.
Yeah. Have her call Mercy out.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. The cost of getting into home ownership for younger people today is absurd, too, in the area that we live. I don't know how anyone can afford to live in this coastal area, if you will, Costa Mesa, the Newport, Seal Beach, Long Beach, Huntington Beach, or even into, farther in, Bill Park or
$4,000 for three-bedroom.
Just the home prices that are just absolutely outrageous. So you've got to come up with a down payment. And then, we're talking about successful, young, dual income families that it's just,
Yeah. Well, even if you can make a monthly payment, where are you going to come up with, $200,000 or $1 million home?
We have a property in Long Beach, other than living in Leisure World and Seal Beach, which is something you're might want to look at because it's very affordable in Leisure World, not for renting, but for owning and your monthly carry. But the house next door to us just a year and a half ago sold for $850,000, young couple. And it's just like, these people are swimming in debt, They've got kids, and it's just like, it's rough.
Yeah, so we pulled the plug on, and most cities have, on any kind of first-time home buyer programs because the math just doesn't work anymore.
Because
net to income ratios that you have to fit in and the cost of the home always 100% of the time exceeds that debt to income ratio. So there are no more first-time home buyer programs.
It's important. So right, what resources do you access as a young couple or first time home?
It takes people who are professionals and have good income and put them into the renter class, And so we also have a 10-unit apartment building in Garden Grove. And so it's kind of like I'm part of the problem as opposed to part of the solution, except that we've had one vacancy in the last 5 years, literally.
we take, what do they call it, Section 8 housing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like eight of our units are all Section 8. We're happy to have those people, honestly, but we're not jacking up rents. We're not throwing people out. We're not doing any of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the problem is in Orange County, when you have developers that build those multi-million dollar homes because people are buying them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how do you tell them, yeah, don't build those, build those lower income? I got to go, wait a minute.
Right.
Yeah.
These are selling, I'm making a fortune. Why in the world wouldn't I do that? Yeah. Well, get a social conscience and, you know, okay, well.
Yeah, no way.
Yeah.
Inclusionary housing ordinances are the way to not combat, because capitalism built America, what are you going to do, right?
But to, in lieu of producing affordable units, fine, you don't have to make all the money you want. You can pay an in-lieu fee to an affordable housing fund that then goes to build affordable housing in that city, or designate a certain percentage of your units to be affordable, which again,
they have to do that. The RENA numbers, to get the RENA numbers out of each city.
They don't have, the city does.
The city does, that's what I'm saying.
Don't start me on RENA.
Yeah, me either. It's a horrible methodology.
Well, it's a one size fits all, which comes out a second.
Are you certified?
Huh?
Are you certified, RENA? Have you been certified? Yes. HCD? Have you been certified?
Knock on wood, we are just about.
We have to have a vote, though. Yeah, we're certified, pending a vote that we have to do. Other people, and it's a weird deal.
Know about their communities.
We're not certified. So Costa Mesa's housing element has been accepted, but not certified because it came in after the date. But the problem was that was an HCD capacity issue. We submitted it on time. They didn't have staff to review in time.
Yes,
now we're being penalized.
We had our person and HCD change three times.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, come on.
Especially staff turned down our first application. We're about to submit our second one right now.
Yeah,
we're getting nasty notes from Sacramento.
Oh, yeah.
We
were one of the first, but it was not easy. But we got
I do like your suggestion in terms of like when cities start negotiating with developers to buy property for whatever reason. You know, usually they build in with, okay, you got to put a park in here, you got to do that or the other. But yeah, I think that's a really good idea, suggestion in terms of dealing with the homeless population.
Yeah.
If you're not going to build affordable housing, then your funds go into, and specific for that city.
Right.
But you're not really in a position of strength to negotiate like that.
Oh, there's a lot of motivation.
Well, they can just say, fine, we'll go to another city.
Which is true. And
they can.
But
if
everyone,
yeah,
that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
It's more of a
needs to be a joint effort.
So then they can't go to certain cities. But, you know,
play one against the other.
And then that's the fine line you walk. You don't want to make it so oppressive that no one wants to come to your city and build.
Right.
But you need to be able to support your community with affordable housing. So, you know, there's a fine line there. If your in-lieu fees are too high, then yeah, people just go to somewhere.
It would be so much easier if we were just given, okay, Sacramento, you know, we know what you want. Let us do that. We do need a palette of different housing. Get it. Our issue is not low income or high income. Ours right in the middle. Our middle class homes, they're not there.
Well, that's it. That's
not there.
That's exactly the people that have been hit. You know, you say people who are, especially younger kids. I have a daughter in San Francisco and, you know, very well educated in nursing. You know, her and her husband are having the hardest time trying to find a place because the market is so expensive.
It can't be done. Frankly, I don't think RENA or anything else can make anything any better.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
RENA is affordable housing. Okay, affordable in Yorba Linda is like 800,000, 900,000. That's not affordable anyway.
It is that kind of middle, and it's across the board because we found the same with colleges as well. If you have plenty of money, you can go to any college you want. If you have no money, you can get all of the grants and subsidies and everything else. Again. But if you earn a certain income,
mm-hmm.
no help at all. Yeah, no.
It's a middle class plight.
Yeah.
It's
where I find myself.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Yes.
For your service also in law enforcement.
Yes.
You guys are amazing. I have a soft spot for all my law enforcement friends. And thank you for having me today.
My pleasure.
And for coming today. Can we get a copy of your presentation?
I have it.
Yeah.
Send it out.
You're more than welcome to send it too. And then if there's any other additional questions, please email a call. Email is better and we can set up a call just because I'm in and out of the office so much. I don't want to miss you and then I think I'm enjoying it.
Yes, we'll take a quick, yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome to stay, or if you're busy, you want to leave.
Yeah, I got to go. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay, we're going to take a 5 break, but thank you again. Really appreciate it. Glad we finally got.
I know, right?
Yes. So,
thank you.
Of course. Thank you all.
531.
All right. Everyone have a little break. Anyone needs any kind of sweet treat or whatever? So I don't want to take them home. All right. Moving on to chair items, old and new business. I don't really have any. Tomorrow's meeting, we'll be resuming discussion on the bylaws. Hopefully, we'll be able to adopt something. So I encourage everyone to make sure they show up tomorrow for that.
Yeah, please come prepared tomorrow.
Yeah,
to the meeting.
Because as you know, last time we spent a lot of time discussing it, which was a great discussion, and then made some minor changes, just really basically one section. And so in the agenda that was sent out last week, it has those red line areas and the suggestions for adoption of the new suggestions.
Yeah.
And if you new suggestions.
Yeah. And if you have any questions, we want to talk about it, but at least give it a glance over and have your questions in order as opposed to just seeing it for the first time at the meeting.
Yeah.
And then that's where it kind of got skewed last time. Mm-hmm. So, hopefully, we want to have a good, robust discussion on it, but a productive one.
And I feel like that last time we did a really good job of recognizing at least the committee that the ad hoc committee that was on the bylaws, we were pretty confident with the very beginning and the mission statement and everything and how broad that was. So I know there was some discussion perhaps about that, but it's really that one section about how many members that was really kind of the focus. So I imagine that will be brought up again. It's all in your email. And then also perhaps some discussion for the mission and the purpose. But for me personally, I like it being abroad because it can, for a succession plan, it can be molded differently should the needs of the organization change later. So that's it for that. Hopefully everyone can attend tomorrow. Okay, announcements and roundtable discussion. So comments are limited to 1 minute. If anybody has anything they'd like to add or say, or perhaps anything for next meeting, if you want to put anything on agenda or suggest anything. Does anybody have anything? How great the snacks were today?
They were great. Thank you for bringing them.
They were good.
I look forward to your meeting to see what I can eat, right, Elizabeth? I wouldn't miss your meeting.
I do have a comment. I'm pretty sure I'm in the minority on this, but I enjoy these meetings. I mean, I've only been around for a few months, and I've learned a lot.
What? That's what you still enjoy.
Well, I don't know everything, so I mean, I'm on the learning curve, and I'm enjoying the learning curve, and it's been great. So I'm going to miss this committee. We actually do away with the four committee structure, going to the one thing.
We're still talking about that. Let's see what we can work out.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
Have a special session just for Nathan.
Oh, and Crystal brought up a good point at the big meeting. This is not this protest. We can try this, and there's no law that we can't go back to the way it used to be or make minor adjustments or changes. So
the real issue, Nathan, has been, though, that these are good, but the rest of the group doesn't get this. They don't get advantage of this. So how can we do
them showing up? I mean,
why go to two meetings? I know you like meetings, but others may say, hey, Why can't the general replicate this? Why can't we have this Nate speak to the general?
Yeah, and to bring in fair to ask Nate to come back to, and they don't have the time or the resources to go around the three committee meetings, subcommittees, and then the full meeting together. And also, in addition to that, I think it provides for a more robust discussion on the topics, transportation, housing, and you get everyone's input as opposed to, you know, this committee's input, where at the general meeting, they're given like 2 minutes to report out on it, and there's no real discussion or engagement.
I confess, this is largely educational for me. This is why I'm showing up, and I'm not sure what influence that we have as a subcommittee on anything, anywhere, for any reason. So, I mean, I still haven't figured that one out, but I enjoy the meetings because they're educational. But
so you brought up a really good point, which is exactly if we're able to get to the point, say next year or something like that, where it is just one meeting, right? And we have somebody like Nate come, and I'll bring snacks still to that too, because maybe you're just gonna miss the snacks. but so your point about, you know, what happens next kind of is what I'm getting, which is what I had originally kind of set way back when I was asked to chair one of these. So I was like, well, unless I feel like we're going to be able to do something, I mean, it's like, well, I can't make any impact. If we get to that point, then yes, we could, as a whole body, hopefully, eventually, I'm not trying to get ahead of myself or say anything, but we could then eventually, as a whole body, go, hey, look, we've got so many electeds here, you know, maybe not specifically Nate's program, but that whole concept of the city council getting involved with something, and we could then advocate as a whole body to the individual cities that are there. We go back and we talk to our city managers, or we go back and we talk to our community center, or we go back and talk to our, you know, advocate that's on homelessness or whatever. So it's that kind of domino effect that, you know, there's nothing that prevents me from going back, or Gene. The power in numbers, if he goes and I go and all the other representatives go, and then all of a sudden all the city managers at their city manager meeting are going, God, your guy talked to you about that too? So did mine. And yours talked to you about, wow, okay, I guess we should do something. You know what I mean? So that's kind of where I see
and Crystal, it going. You know, I used to belong to this. I'm coming back. But one of my things, reason I left too, is that I didn't feel we were accomplishing much, and then we could always do it ad hoc. You get an idea that you wanted to pursue as a housing and thing, do an ad hoc meeting, and then you could start meeting on that. But to incorporate it into one big meeting will be more beneficial, period.
You do what you're saying, Nathan, what your role would be, we hope, out of a meeting like this, is you go back to your city and ask questions. How about asking questions? Hey, I heard this presentation. What are we doing for homeless? What's our program? How does it work? Who's it available to?
I've already had that discussion at Seal Beach, but it's fleshing out. You know, it's like you get your first pass and you catch this much. You get to the second pass.
We're all there.
And then you start seeing what other cities are doing, like Costa Mesa. And then suddenly I've got actually a body of knowledge that's, you know,
helpful for us. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And the people who are on the committee as well, not everyone is elected officials, but all the people who are on this, the main SCAC general committee, also have the option of going to their city council meetings under public comment twice a month when they meet to say, hey, was at the SCAC meeting last week. This is what's happening. And I just give a report. I think repetitive gets the word there. So I think everyone on this committee has a role to play.
Or if you like the speaker, invite them to your council meeting. I did that with a couple of ours. They presented to our the one on transportation, remember that? She came out and gave a full-blown presentation to our council meeting during, when we were recounting folks and
right.
We'll blurb out. So, yeah, take advantage of that.
But we love that.
And always ask questions. Don't be afraid of that. That's the whole ballgame.
And I'll bring snacks. If we get to the big team, I'll definitely bring snacks. That's what I hopefully participated in creating. So
yes.
I have a question. It's regarding the housing. And I heard, so please correct me if what I was told is incorrect, that they said Orange. Now, I don't know if they mean City of Orange, Orange County is building
affordable housing in Anaheim. However, citizens of Anaheim are not allowed to rent in these new facilities.
I have not heard
it. It can't be the city of Orangeville in Anaheim. They wouldn't do that. It's got to be the county.
Right, yeah.
It may be the county bought a property that they're going to turn into a, turn those apartments into a housing facility for the, you know, the underserved. Yeah, that's possible. Yeah.
But how could you prohibit Anaheim residents?
I don't think you prohibit Anaheim residents. You prohibit by economic status. If you're not at a certain level, they wouldn't say, well, no, this is but Anaheim. That wouldn't work.
Okay.
Yeah, in fact, I don't think that's legal.
Don't you hear that? The projects
of a city employee.
Really?
Hmm. Let me check into that.
Yeah. Right. I'm just kind of curious.
I'm kind of curious too.
The projects that Nate talked about where they converted older hotels to housing, that actually is something I suggested some years back to somebody and they told me I was nuts. But where did I write it? It's very economical compared to building ground up. I did the math real quick. I remember one time a few years ago, LA was bragging about this new homeless shelter project or it was actually permanent housing that they had created and opened this many units. And I did the math real quick. It was $800,000 a unit.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was higher than the average unit in Orange County, anyway, at that time. I don't know what the average unit was in LA at the time. But the one that he was talking about that included social services was only $255,000 a unit.
But you've got to find a city. But you've got to find a city that has the mindset to do that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of community members are going to say, well, yep. Now you've made it permanent that this low income group are going to stay here. And I live in the area and I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to see it or whatever. Yeah.
But a lot of times when you remember when we used to have redevelopment areas, we don't have those anymore. But those unit, there are a lot of places where you could take one of those older motels that are on the edge of a not so great area and make the area better. Then they're usually closer to the freeway and closer to public transportation too. I remember researching it and looking into it all those years ago when I
was. Well, you are seeing that now. What they rehab in these cities, Anaheim, they're very nice.
Yeah,
they're very nice looking. They're attractive.
They're nice. They don't have to be $100,000. So
no, I don't know that. I don't know that.
The only one that's benefiting there is the developer.
Exactly.
And also, what's good about the motels is it's not like 200 units.
Right.
You're maybe doing 30, 50, 60, but when you keep it smaller, you don't want to build like a Cabrini Green where you have a massive amount of housing in one building. That's never good.
Right. Out of my past, I lived in Chicago for years. Cabrini Green is still Cabrini Green. It was a nasty place to be around.
But that's part of the problem because it's too big.
Not too long ago, and it looked pretty decent. I think they've cleaned that
place. Well, they've actually taken out the great big, destroyed some of the great big green apartments.
Yeah.
It
looked nice. Okay.
Moving on, just out of respect for everyone's time, does anyone have any other comments?
Sorry.
Okay. Then I will call the meeting adjourned at 10:50.
We do have a meeting tomorrow, Scott. Yeah.
Yes. Tomorrow at Easter Seals, and then the next meeting is November 9th.
Yep. See you tomorrow.
Yes. Thank you.
Ribbon 9th.